Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 358, and we shall continue with Numbers chapter 32, where Moses basically was dealing with the children of Reuben and Gad, who wanted to stay on the east bank of the Jordan, and he had to let them understand the ramifications of their actions. Obviously, at this point, he's not fully aware of what was their intention on the matter. And then when he talks to them, and that's what the leader should do, you see, he should find out what is really happening before he makes judgment, before he concludes anything, before he renders judgment. And that's something that all of us should be in, regardless in what position we are, you see. And, you know, that's the way of God. And so, even though what they were asking for was not the will of God, it does not mean that it is rebellion. And oftentimes that's the way people regard it. Well, this is not the will of God. God didn't command that. And if you do it, that's contrary to Him. Well, it doesn't have to be. You see? So, that's what Solomon says. That, you know, you have to hear the whole matter, because if you don't, you're going to be, you know, a fool. And so you cannot accuse people of doing certain things which, you know, they really don't mean to, and then find yourself backtracking based on that. And so this is what Moses is telling them, recounting what is it that the children of Israel had done 40 years earlier and the damage they brought upon the entirety of the whole nation. And so he's helping them to comprehend, realize that if they continue to follow in that path of their forefathers, they are going to bring punishment upon the whole nation. Well, obviously, this is not what was their intention. And so this is what we study here. And that's the reason why God takes a whole chapter to explain that. And when you study that, you can learn an awful lot of lessons in government, in listening, you see, in doing certain things that it's okay if God didn't say them, or if you said them otherwise, if they're not contrary to the will of God, and you do it with a proper attitude, and you bring it to His attention, or you bring it to the attention of the leadership, and they say, okay, well, I guess, you know, there are different ways of doing it. And that's how families live in peace together, without fighting one another and going to war and just clobbering one another, because they're not willing to listen. They're not willing to comprehend, to understand. They're not willing to hear the whole matter. So this is a very classic chapter for learning this kind of matters and how to deal with them within the family, within the community, and with God Himself. And so this is what He's saying here now to them. Because of the actions of their forefathers, were really actions of rebellion, and that came out of fear. You see, when people fear, they're not willing to do it, and then they're not going to do it no matter what, and that's when rebellion sets in, and they have no faith in God. And so in verse 10 it tells them, the Lord's anger was kindled in that day, and He swore, saying, surely none of the men that came out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which has sworn to Abraham, and unto Isaac, and unto Jacob. You see? It's not to Abraham and Ishmael, or Isaac and Esau, but He made it very plain, that's the way God intended for it to be. And therefore, since He swore, that is, to give it to them and to their descendants, it would have been a blasphemy on their part to reject it, just like it was on the part of Esau, to reject the birthright, and God was not about to forgive him, and to this very day, He's paying the penalty for it. And so Moses is trying to prevent all that, not only for them, but for future generations to come. And he said, because they have not wholly followed me. And God demands that when we follow Him wholly, all the way, not just partially. So they're willing to come all the way to that point, but not go beyond it, not go into the Jordan, not cross the river, you see. They just wanted to stick around when things were nice. And God demands, as He made it very plain, that the person who is not willing to take his cross and follow me, you know, all the way to the end of the road, no matter how painful it is, he is not worthy of me. And this generation was not worthy of him, and so he would not let them in. And that goes for every single one of us. If we're not willing to take that burden that He laid upon us, as He said, yes, I'm going to give you the kingdom, that's the will of God, but you're going to get it with persecution, with tribulation. As Paul would say, through much tribulation we must enter into the kingdom. You cannot just say, well, I'm here only for the good times. And so, you know, as soon as bad things happen, I'm taking off. And that's why we are told that it is many that are being called, but only the few that are being chosen. And that's basically the way it works. And the very few that are the chosen ones are the very elect. That no matter what is going to happen in the future, problems, troubles, tribulation, and including deception, you know, great deceptions that is going to shake the faith of many, where people who do not have a foundation would not know whether it is of God or not. But the very elect are not going to be deceived, as Jesus Christ warned his disciples. And most people, they are in organizations, in churches, in groups, in whatever configuration they are in. And as long as things are going smoothly, nicely, maybe a little problems, they can put up with it. But when major upheavals come, you see major problems or even personal things that happen, they say, well, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'll go somewhere else. Well, they go somewhere else and they repeat the same process, because somewhere else the same kind of people are who have problems one way or the other, and they keep drifting from one to another and they never know where to stop. Instead of just realizing it, that's the way it's going to be until the end of time. And we're going to have to deal with it and endure until the end, no matter what happens. You see, we'll do what we can, but on the other hand, realize at the same time, we don't necessarily have to respond to everything, and we do not have to have everything resolved, and we do not have to have everything taken care of in this lifetime. That's why Christ said, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And at times you're going to have to wait until the end. In the meantime, you will have to bite your lip and take it. And we just don't function like that. Anyway, Moses is trying to explain a lot of these things to his people, that they have to be responsible for the community, and that's exactly what he's doing here with them. And so he told them that only very few, there were only actually two, were willing to totally follow him. That's what he says. And only the very few who have, speaking about the many, because they have not followed me, that is, they have not wholly followed me, but only the few were willing to do it. And so he says in verse 12, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzites, and Joshua, the son of Nun, because they have wholly followed the Eternal. These are the very elect, that no matter what, they were not fearful. Where once they set their hands to the plow, they were willing to take their course and go all the way to the end, no matter how difficult problems are going to be ahead of them. You see, that's how we follow God wholly, all the way, willing to take all the pain and affliction that come along the way, the persecution, the tribulation. Never give up. Never say, where is God? You see, the only kind of people that behave in that manner are the people who have no foundation, and their faith is a shaky one. It's not on the rock. And so when the sandstorms come and the wind and the rain and things like that, well, whatever they created, whatever foundation they had, really topples, because it's not really built on a solid rock. And that's a lesson for us to this very day to learn from. And so this is what we read here. And the Lord's anger were kindled against Israel, and he made them wander to and fro in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Eternal was consumed. Well, in the process, their children had to suffer. And instead of entering the land at age 20 and have, you know, their whole life ahead of them to build a family and a house, you know, and plant the land, their vineyards and things like that, all the trees, for another 40 years they had to tag along, you know, with their parents, you know, always thinking about their parents, you know, it's because of you that I'm here, and had to wait until age 60. Imagine that. Well, that's, in essence, what God is trying to warn us against constantly. That it's best to obey God, no matter how difficult things may be at the moment, because if we don't, things will be much tougher after that. And so we read in verse 14, he says to them, and behold, you are risen up in your father's stead, he's just following in their footsteps, a brood of sinful men, to augment yet the fierce anger of the Eternal toward Israel. Now that's what he thought that they were at the moment, but Moses was in error. Moses was wrong. He misjudged them. He made a mistake. He did not listen to the whole matter to know really what's on their mind. And so this is a mistake that God in essence recorded about a leader that should have known better. You see? And so all of us are subject to all kind of things like that, and that's why no matter how bad things may seem to be, it's best to first, according to the law that Moses himself quoted and told Israel, when you have a matter, you search, you diligently search. Later on we're going to read that in Deuteronomy, and make sure that all those things that you are saying or seeing or, you know, being told are exactly so. Otherwise, Solomon said, you will make a fool out of yourself, and you will make you'll make a mistake, and if you're allowed to go forward, you know, you're going to afflict people unnecessarily so, without justice. And so there are many lessons to be learned here on all sides. And so this is what he says to them, verse 15, for if you turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness. That is, all of your children are going to be there. Nobody's going to make it into the land. And so you will destroy these people. So he was worried about what happened 40 years ago, and because of that, you know, he said what he said. But still the fact remains that when people bring any issue to you, first listen to the entirety of the matter before you make a judgment. And regardless of who you are, even if you are Moses. Verse 15, that's what he says here, for if you turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and so you will destroy these people, that everybody's going to suffer. And that's not at all what was on their mind, so all that was not necessary. Verse 16, and they came near unto him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will be ready armed to go before the children of Israel until we have brought them unto their place. And our little ones shall dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. So now they're telling him what's really on their mind. And had you just listened to them and asked them, you know, what are you going to do about your responsibility, the whole thing would have been settled without having to throw at them accusations. And so that's something very interesting for us to ponder and think about ourselves. Is that the way we react? You know, first reaction? You know, first shoot and then speak? Whatever it may be. That's a tendency oftentimes that all of us may have one way or the other, when we are uptight, when we are patient, when especially when something bad happens, and that's the first thing that comes to our mind and we react. You see, God does not react. There is no need to react. God wants to know everything. He checks everything, just like what he said, as you read in earlier in Genesis, about the Tower of Babel. You see, that's what they were doing, and you read the statement there. Not that he couldn't find that out, you know, from up in heaven. But you see the way God functions and what he, in essence, teaches us through that. He says, let us go down and see whether those things are so. You see? And then based on that, we're going to act. But the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, it was the same. You know, we're going to go down there, Sodom and Gomorrah, and see how things are. And then based on that, we're going to react. You see? In other words, it's not going to be reaction at that time. We're just taking action. So this is a very profound lesson, you know, for leadership and for all of us. And, you know, with our children, you know, we oftentimes are uptight with them and angry. And, you know, we accuse them of doing this and that and the other thing without hearing the whole matter. We think we know it all. You know, we know better. You see? So that's a lesson, you know, in humility that we had to learn. And here's Moses is going to be proven wrong. You see, and then he changed his mind. Obviously, he realized that, and you can imagine that he said other things also. And so this is what they said. Well, we're going to be all the way with you. You know, that's not the, you know, the question. That's not the issue here. You see, no need to accuse us of that, in essence. And so he says, we're going to be there and help them all the way. And until we brought them unto their place, and our little ones shall dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. So we need to take care of our family, so we need to stick around for a little while, build those places, and make sure that everybody's secure, you see, and then we're ready, willing, and able to go with you and help all the rest of our brethren on the other side of the Jordan. And so they said, we will not return unto our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. Well, that's a good attitude. And they obviously had it to begin with. So there was no reason to accuse them needlessly and then have to backtrack. Verse 19, for we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and forward. Why? You see? Now they bring something to his attention that he should have thought about it. You see? We are not going to be with them in their inheritance because our inheritance is fallen to us on this side of the Jordan eastward. And how do you know that? Because, well, you read earlier what Moses himself had done. When those lands were conquered, he assigned those lands to these tribes. So there was nothing wrong with them of wanting to be there. He just thought that they were going to take their inheritance without showing any willingness to go and help the rest of the tribes to conquer their own land. You see? And being too anxious about that, he just, in essence, spoke a little bit too soon. And that was not on their mind at all. They were willing to go and help the brethren. They just wanted to make sure that their kids and families and women and all that and sheep and cattle are all taken care of. And I think that's one of the reasons why God is recording this entirety of episode here and takes a whole chapter to do it, because it has far-reaching consequences, you see, in our decisions and the way we function and how troubles come when they could be prevented. And how people are rash, you know, and they're wrathful, and they're angry immediately, you know, something that doesn't go along with their own thinking. And God is teaching all of us a lesson, and He's using Moses here as an example, and all of us can learn from that too. Be slow, you know, that's the nature of God, as He told us. He's slow to anger. You see, He's not quick to anger. He's slow to anger, slow to wrath. He considers all things before He takes action. And so this is what we read here. And Moses said unto them, if you will do this thing, if you will arm yourselves to go before the Eternal to war, and every armed man of you will pass over the Jordan before the Eternal until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Eternal, and you return up afterward, then you shall be clear before the Eternal and before Israel. Oftentimes, we don't realize that when we do something wrong, we're doing it against men and against God. And we must be walking life in a manner that is pleasing before God and before men. We're not talking about doing the wrong things to be pleasing in their sight, but to do the right things. And that's what it says about Jesus Christ later on, that when he grew from a child, he grew in favor before God and men. And God wants us to be walking in a way that our neighbors and the people around us will see our lights, we'll see our good works, we'll see that we're the salt of the earth, and then when the time comes, we're going to give thanks to God. You see? So, this is important always to do to remember the responsibility that we have both toward those around us and toward God. Otherwise, we become stumbling block before them, and if God wants to work with them, you know, things are much more difficult then, and we're responsible for it. And so that's what he's saying here. And then you're going to be clear in the sight of God and the sight of men, before God and before Israel. And this land shall be unto you for a possession before the Eternal. But if you will not do so, which they did not intend to anyways, behold, you have sinned against the Eternal, and know you, your sin will find you out. Again, another major principle that is recorded here. And that's the reason why God records this whole thing. There are many good lessons here to learn. A lot of spiritual meat. And we all should remember that when we do wrong, sooner or later, you see, that's why people, you know, say all the chicken are coming to roost, you know, in due time if you do certain things that are wrong or right. And so that's what he's warning against, not only them, but every single one of us, and that's what God warns us. We should never think that we can hide anything. Everything is recorded. We should be fully aware of that. Everything that comes out of our mouth is recorded. Everything that we think and feel is recorded. God knows it all, and he's going to bring it to judgment. You see? Well, that to begin with, they did not intend to, so this whole thing, again, is a learning lesson for all, for leaders, and for those who follow them, that you still have to do all things, no matter what, based on the laws of God. Check it all out, find out, make sure, and then speak, but not the other way around. So this is what he says here. build you cities for your little ones and folds for your sheep, and do that which has proceeded out of your mouth. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spoke unto Moses, saying, your servants will do as my Lord commands. Now, we are obedient. There was no need to judge us too early. Verse 26, our little ones, our wives, our flocks, and all our cattle shall be there in the cities of Gilead. But your servants will pass over every man that is armed for war before the Eternal to battle, as my Lord says. So Moses gave charge concerning them to Eleazar the priest, and to Joshua the son of Nun, and to the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the children of Israel. So all of them would know, you see. And so there's going to be a collective responsibility there on the part of all to make sure all these things are done right. And that's what he did here. And Moses said unto them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over the Jordan, every man that is armed to battle before the Eternal, and the land shall be subdued before you, you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. And mind you, it's interesting here, because had the tribe of Manasseh also received a piece of land there, but apparently they did not intend to do the same like these two tribes. They intended to go with their other half of Manasseh and their brother Ephraim, and to do battle there, and then when the time comes, to go back to their land. So that's why they're not mentioned here. It was not an issue there. But still, that was not a problem with God, and so he allowed it. And you see how sometimes things can be worked out, where people think, well, you know, we cannot compromise anything. Well, you can work out certain things where it benefits all and nobody is damaged. And when people do not function that way, well, they think, well, you either do it my way or else. I'm the leader, I'm the boss, I'll tell you what to do, and so forth. Well, what you create by that is a lot of animosity, a lot of resentment, and you haven't you're not really a man of peace. You see, if you function like that, and a lot of leaders, unfortunately, they are in absolute charge, and they want to make sure everybody is in step, and if they don't follow them exactly as they told them to, well, they clobber them, and they create more damage there. And God says, no, there are times for the leader to listen and to change his mind, because what is being done is not necessarily wrong. You just, you know, you do it in a different way, but, you know, it doesn't alter anything from the overall plan. Verse 30, that's what he says here, but if you will not pass over with you armed, that is all the men, they shall have possession among you in the land of Canaan. So if they're not willing to do it, well, you're going to make sure that they inherit the land with you and not on this side. In other words, they're going to lose this land here. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, saying, as the Lord has said unto your servants, so we will do. We will pass over armed before the Eternal into the land of Canaan, and the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us beyond the Jordan. You see, they were not interested in losing it. And so to begin with, they were obedient. And that's what was happening here. And then later on, when Joshua was a leader, they told him very plainly, we're going to be with you all the way. And they said very plainly, you can read it later on in Joshua, that any man who is going to rebel against you will be put to death. So they were obedient people all the way. Good attitude. And so there was no reason, when people come with good attitude, for the leadership not to listen and to even modify, you know, if it does not alter or harm or damage the plan, whatever the plan may be, or other people around. That's again, you know, humility that God demands on the part of all, those who are on the top and those who are not. Verse 33, and Moses gave unto them, even to the children of Gad, and to the children of Reuben, and unto the half-tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, the land which he already did earlier, anyway, when they conquered it, according to the cities thereof, with their borders, even the cities of the land round about. And the children of Gad built Dibon, and Atarot, and Aroer, and Atarot Sophan, and Jezer, and Yogbeha, and Beth Nimra, and Beth Haran, fortified cities, and folds for sheep. That's how the way they built them, to make sure that the family are taken care of. Fortified cities, and folds for sheep. And the children of Reuben built Heshbon, and Elealach, and Kiryataim, and Nebo, the place where Moses was buried. He was obviously buried on top of the mount, and they were there, down there, the village. And Baal Meon, their names being changed In other words, from the Canaanite or the Amorite names that they had, they obviously changed them to Hebrew names. And Sibma, and gave their names unto the city. There's, you know, that is the cities that they occupied there and built, which they built. So those were not the cities of the Canaanites or the Amorites, as many of the children of Israel had basically occupied the cities that were already there. But they totally changed everything there by building their own cities and giving them their own names. And the children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, went to Gilead and took it and dispossessed the Amorites that were therein. And Moses gave Gilead unto Machir, the son of Manasseh, and it dwelt therein. So the east bank of the Jordan is, in modern terminology, that part here is an American territory, you see, and French territory. And the people of God, you know, the Belgium is feel that that's what they are, and they are generally people who are generally attached to the French people because they developed this culture and ties and bond from this period of time. We're talking about 3,500 years bond that they had between them, and so whenever they migrated, were taken to exile, they remained close to each other because they developed a lot of cultural ties. And even the language is the same to this very day. You know, the French language spoken by both the French people, the Reubenites and the Gadites. And of course, the Gadites are the people of Belgium today. And some of their descendants, in other words, some of these people, went to other places likewise. We find them in the Louisiana area and different parts of the United States, in the South mainly, and then we find them also in Canada in some areas. And so we continue now with verse 41. And Jair in English, Jair means will bring light. Jair obviously doesn't mean anything. That's a problem always, you know, with the mistranslation of a language. Anyway, Jair, the son of Manasseh, went and took the villages thereof and called them Havot Jair. So that was a custom for people. Whenever they went someplace, obviously they want to give it their own name. And that was very customary among the nations of the time, and people still do it to this very day. And so he called it Havot Jair. Havot means basically the Hava is today for ranch or farmland. And so he called it the farmlands or the ranches of Jair. And you see the descendants of these people coming to the United States, and they've got ranches everywhere. And so, we read in verse 42, and Nova went and took Kenath, that is, and the villages thereof, and called it Nova, after his own name. And actually in English, you say Nova, but in Hebrew it's Novah, with a high at the end, like Juanita. And it's very, very interesting name, because basically you use that one for a dog barking. Novah, Noveach. Why did they call him that way? Who knows? Maybe he started his life as a baby barking all the time. And then we continue after this one to the next chapter. And so we read in chapter 33 now about the journeys of the children of Israel and the journey from one place to another. And so it's going to be a little bit of a itinerary here from city to city, name to name, and all that. And obviously it's not the most exciting part of scriptures, but it is here. God recorded it. He wanted it recorded right there for those people. When they traveled, it was meaningful, obviously. As time went by, it became less and less, but still, God wanted them to record these things. And it's interesting that nowadays, the archaeologists in Israel who have no faith, no knowledge of God, no trust in the Word of God, nothing. They just look around and they don't see any remnants for what they think should be there. And so they proclaim, well, there was no such a thing. Israel never was in Egypt. They never came through the Sinai or the desert or whatever. And they never came to the land as a nation, as a people, as described. You know, they had never had the conquest of Joshua and so forth. Well, here God took the time to record every tiny little detail in the places where they went, and the descendants of this very people, you see, are on the scene today, and they claim it never happened. Now that's unfortunately what happens with people that depart far away from God. If you don't see it, they don't believe it, like doubting Thomas. So in chapter 33, we're going to read about the journeys of the children of Israel who are one day going to be resurrected and going to confront those archaeologists and going to have a few things to say to them. These are the stages, verse 1, all the children of Israel. Elim Masa'e in Hebrew, in other words, these are the journeys, because what happened here, they journeyed from one place, and then they stopped, and then they journeyed to another place, and so they decided to translate it to stages, because they traveled in stages, obviously, but then everybody does. And so we read here, these are the stages of the children of Israel, by which they went forth out of the land of Egypt by their hosts, under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Up to now, they just mentioned a few little places here, but now God decided to have Moses record every single place that they stopped, and they encamped, and the tent was there, and the cloud was there, and remember, as we read earlier, it was God who went forward first with the cloud, searching for a place, suitable place for his people, and then when it stopped, that's when the children of Israel also stopped at that point. And so every single place here that we read, God decided to stop in that very place. So, you know, it adds some kind of meaning there and importance to it. And so we read, these are the places in all the journeys or the stages when they came out of the land of Egypt by their hosts under the hand of Moses and Aaron. And Moses wrote their goings forth stage by stage. In other words, journey by journey. By the commandment of the Lord. It's not something that he decided on his mind, on his own, you know, well, we stopped here and then we stopped there. You see? So here you see something that God himself, the King of Israel, the husband of Israel, the people that were, you know, in other words, the one that came later on in the flesh, is Jesus Christ. And so, we're reading here, description by Jesus Christ. As he stopped somewhere in Galilee or Judea or whatever, and he recorded every one of those places, well, people will be reading them, and they will say, well, these are the words of Christ, and they will be in red letters. But, you know, because people have no understanding of that, no appreciation for it, and an awful lot of us probably will think, you know, what a boring chapter. Now, let's just skip to more juicy matters, you know, spiritual things. And we do not delve into the mind of God to realize that that's how he thinks. You see? And so the Apostle Paul tells us later, put on the mind of Christ. You see, the mind that was in Christ. And so we think only in terms of qualities and traits and things like that. And we don't realize, no, when he said it, he meant all of it, not just part of it, so you would know how he thinks. You see? And so this chapter, in essence, gives you another dimension of the mind of Jesus Christ, of the mind of the God of Israel. And so Moses wrote them by the commandments of the Eternal, or the commandments of Jesus Christ. And these are the stages at their goings forth, and the journey from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month, and the 15th day was the first holy day, so they traveled on the holy day, and generally after that it was forbidden to do so, because it was a Sabbath, you see, a day where no work is to be done. But it's not, God says, not a day that journey is not to be done. But obviously, when you journey and you carry your things and all that, you do work. So, there were some exceptions. You see, circumstances sometimes dictate otherwise. So, that should give you a clue also, what is it that God allows at times. In spite of the law that he gives, where it should be a day that is a holy convocation, and this is what people should be doing. But this was a different case. And this was the first Sabbath in the plan of God after the weekly Sabbath. You see, there were eight of them, Leviticus 23, the weekly one, and then there were the seven, and this is the first one of them. And so they journeyed on that one, and also they journeyed 40 years later as they entered into Jericho on that day as they were coming into Jericho. And so this is what we read here. On the 15th day of the first month, on the morrow after the Passover, you see, just like we read in Leviticus 23. That's when the star began to count. Now, the Passover was on the 14th at even. On the morrow of the Passover was the 15th at even. You see? That's another clue to the timing of the beginning of the count for Pentecost. And, of course, a lot of people that decided that the weekly Sabbath is what Moses was talking about, well, obviously they decided to count in a different way. So here it is, another clue. When is it to begin the count? On the morrow after the Passover, and earlier it told you that it was on the morrow of the 15th. And that's when the Hebrew manuscripts, or the different manuscripts that the Jewish community used, they realized that some people are going to get confused. And so in the Septuagint, they just wrote plainly, on the morrow of the Passover. In the Targum, the Aramaic manuscript, they wrote on the morrow of the Pascha, which is Passover again. And the Jerusalemite translation, I believe, I don't know if that one was another one, can recall offhand, but I know I read it. And there it says, on the morrow of the first day. See, the first day of Passover, which is on the 15th. So, you know, this statement is very plain, and yet when we do not know the entirety of the manuscript, of the writings of God, obviously we begin to misunderstand things. And once people do it, and then it becomes a sacred cow, you see, and they have such a conviction in misinformation, just like most religions on the face of the earth, as a matter of fact, all of them, they're not about to change no matter what you tell them. Well, we all have to come to the knowledge of the truth, being led by the Holy Spirit, one way or the other, in the unity of the faith, and that's going to happen up, unfortunately, only at the end of time. And so, this is what we read here, that, again, and they journeyed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the month, you see, the first month. And when did it happen? When was the 15th day? It was on the morrow after the Passover, you see. And so, on the morrow of the Passover was the night before that. And on the morrow of this first Sabbath also, there was a count for Pentecost. And it is on the morrow of this one that they have arrived also near Jericho, as we read in Joshua chapter 5 and verse 10. And it is at that point that they were allowed to eat of the produce of the land, which God told them they cannot eat until they begin to count and bring the wave sheaf offering. So they've done it on the 15th at even, at the end of the Sabbath. That is the annual Sabbath, or the first holy day. And so this is what we read here. And the children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians. They were out there, you know, to see them live their own land, because they were afraid they'd all be dead. While the Egyptians were burying them, that the Eternal had smitten among them, even all the firstborn upon their gods. Also the Lord executed judgments. And the children of Israel journeyed into Ramses, that is from Ramses, and pitched in Sukkot. Sukkot means the Feast of Sukkot, Feast of Booths, because they built booths over there. And that was the name of the place also. And they journeyed from Sukkot and pitched in Etam, which is in the edge of the wilderness. And they journeyed from Etam and turned back into Pi-Hahiroth. In English they said Pi-Hahiroth, which doesn't make sense at all. Pi-Hahiroth, which means the mouth. You see, Pi means mouth. Pi doesn't mean mouth. And Hahiroth, that was the name of the place. And that was basically a place where there was a lake there. The river was very wide, looked like a lake, so they called it the mouth of that lake, and that was the name of it, which is before Baal Tsefon. Baal means, you all know what Baal means, Lord, Master, or Owner, or Head of the House, or whatever it may be. And Tsefon means North. Well, those are the names of the places. And apparently, in that place, there must have been an altar for Baal. And so they called it Baal Tsefon, because they had bells in different places. And they pitched before Migdol, which means a tower, and they journeyed from Pnei Hachirot, well, here it gave it a different name, which is actually Pi Hachirot, and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, and that's when they crossed. This is at this point, you see, when the river was very wide and sort of a lake, and that's where they crossed the river, you know, the Yam Suf, as they call it in Hebrew, and journeyed in the wilderness of Etam and pitched in Marah. Marah means bitterness, and that's when the miracle happened, where the water was bitter and everybody was complaining, and God changed it and gave them water. And they came unto Elim, and in Elim were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and that was sort of an oasis, and they pitched there. and the journey from Elim and pitched by the Red Sea, and in English, that is in English, it's called the Red Sea. That's a name that came later on. It's called the Yamsuf, the Sea of Reed, you know, R-E-E-D, and here it is, the Red Sea. Why is it called the Red Sea? For the simple reason, the people of Edom, which is also red, Edom, the brother and twin brother of Jacob, his name was changed to Edom, which means red, and so they migrated further down from the Dead Sea and inhabited all that area, western Saudi Arabia, along the water ways, because there were people of cattle, they were not men of the desert. And so later on it became known as the Red Sea, and wherever they went, their name was given to many places where they were, and so they called it Red, Edom, or in different languages, whatever it was. And well, if you look in historic maps or read historic accounts, you'll find many places in the Middle East that are called Edom. As a matter of fact, when they travel up north into present-day Lebanon, the Greeks called it, or that is, you know, actually the ancient language that they used at the time, they used the word phonic, you see, Phoenicia. That's what Phoenicia is, the land of Edom. A lot of people are not aware of that, and it is from that place that they sprang into many places of the world, first in Europe and then in other places, but from there came the Spanish people. The ancestors of the Spanish people came from Lebanon. And that's what the Spanish people are all about, children of Edom, twin brother of Jacob, and of course today you would never know it. Some of them still look alike. But, you know, as they travel around the, you know, different places, they were always in a habit of intermarrying with the natives. So obviously they took on a lot of blood and they began to alter and to change, you know, their outlook and things like that. And you always see them side by side, Jacob, always vying for the birthright. And we'll continue here from verse 11. Verse 11, and they journeyed from the Red Sea and pitched in the wilderness of Sin. And it's Sin in Hebrew, it's not, in this case it is Sin. Some places it's called Sin, like Pittsburgh, you see, Midbar of Sin. And Sin here, that was the name of the place, and from that comes also the word China, Sin. It's the same name. And they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin. As a matter of fact, there is one prophecy that one of the places that the children of Israel will return from at the end of time will be from the land of Sinim, the land of China. And if it sounds strange, of course some people think today it's Australia, but the reality is that China was always called China, Sin, even in those old days. And then when the children of Israel went into captivity in the area of the Black Sea, Caucasian Mountains and all that, most of them went into Europe, the other ones went into the territory that is known today as Sin, as China. And northern China, the Chinese have a lot of records of the Israelites living there. Many of them are still in the area. Part of northern China, that is China, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and all those adjacent territories. And some people wonder, you know, why is it that in the north of China, the Chinese are very tall and they look have more white features? That's the reason. Israelites mix with them. And that was the end result of that. And of course, they were also in northern India. And so they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and pitched in Dafka and Dovka. And they journeyed from Dovka and pitched in Alush, and journeyed from Alush and pitched in Rephidim. Now, Rephidim, remember, that's when Amalek came to attack Israel, where there was no water for the people to drink. And they journeyed from Rephidim. And it was at that point that people began to, again, murmur against Moses and God and all that. And they were in a rotten state of attitude and mind and things like that. God allowed the enemy at the time, the Amalekites, to come and smite some of them. And they had to go to war, and with the help of God, they won the battle. Though sometimes, you know, when the hands of Moses were down, they were losing. That means people were being killed. Well, that was a punishment at the time also because of their attitude. And verse 16, and they journeyed from the wilderness of Sinai. Now they arrived to Sinai. And pitch in Kivrot HaTa'ava, which means the graves of lusting, because at that point they were complaining the manna was not good enough, you know, that they wanted meat, they wanted this and that. And so God caused many of them to die at that point, and so they buried them there, and they called it the burial ground of lusting. or the lasting burial ground, or the graves of lasting, and pitched in Hatzerot, which means suburbs, and they journeyed from Hatzerot and pitched in Ritma, and they journeyed from Ritma and pitched in Rimon Peretz. And we shall stop at this point. And again, this is Mordechai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.